This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to our viewers and participants. And without further ado, he over there is...
Well, this is Abdurrahim Green. And that one over there, that one over there is...
Abdul Haq Baker.
And this is a...
piece of cake. Okay. How are you doing, Abdurrahim?
Alhamdulillah, bro, I'm okay. Alhamdulillah, jazakallah
khair, not too bad. Why, another week? I hope your week's been good.
It just goes so quick, bro.
It does.
The truth is, I always think, you know, when these sessions end, I think, okay, let me put in a bit of preparation for the next one. You know, do a bit of reading, do a bit, and before I know it, boom, we're here. You know, so it's like, you know, alhamdulillah. But yeah, no, it's been a good week. It's been, you know, just apart from everything, just moving fast, man. You
know? No, mashallah. Jazakallah khair. No, I think that a number of people have already registered interest. Wa alaikum salam, Layla, regarding this particular topic. Brother Khalid, wa alaikum salam. And I think that, yes, Naama, good to see you there again as well. Wa alaikum salam, rahmatullah. This topic is one which I think needs to be discussed. And the title, again, is us, Abdurrahim, looking inwardly, looking outwardly, looking at things that are seldom discussed, I think, transparently. Yeah. So, husbands, okay? What does it mean? Boys to men or just big babies? And why that title, Abdurrahim? The reason why I felt this title needed to be covered is because being a husband, okay, has so many expectations.
Yeah.
Okay, being a husband has so many connotations from a religious perspective, as well as a general Western non-Muslim perspective. And it can be confusing for a number of reasons. Okay, those of us who were raised without fathers, many of us raised in a patriarchal society and being macho and being dominant and being strong, okay? Many of us using the religion prescriptively because we thought initially that that's how it should be used when it came to interaction with our wives, with our children, with being Muslim men, being Muslim husbands. Yeah. And I think that we've made quite a few errors, but I also feel we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much. Yeah. That in wanting and trying and making the efforts like many have made to be good husbands, we have succeeded to some extent, greater or lesser extent, depending on the circumstance and which perspective we're looking at. So is that the case I wanted to ask ourselves? Or are we just... which some may be, people who've grown up into men's bodies still have got that mummy syndrome where we were spoilt and we've married expecting our wives to be surrogate mothers to us and to pander to our every need. And when that's not done, we treat them like we're spoilt kids. There is that perspective as well. So that's why I thought this title would be a good one to open up a whole can of worms, if you want, or a Pandora's box, if you like, whatever.
Absolutely, bro. I mean, look, first let me talk about my own personal perspective, and that is that I mean, we all have issues, but my issues are not those sort of issues, because basically I was sent off to a boarding school when I was 10 years old. So I had to learn to, in many ways, look after myself. Pretty much soon after that, I was living in my own flat, cooked for myself, looked after myself, cleaned well, you know, have a variety of cleaning, I suppose. But, you know, I mean, I've had to look after myself. well, quite a lot in my life. And I took an interest anyway in just cooking when I was a kid, just because it just looked, there's things I wanted to eat and they weren't being cooked. So I just, but I mean, you know, from my perspective, I don't even remember being mothered, you know, like it's just, you know, even when I was at home, you know, my mum didn't really do the cooking. We had a cook, we had servants who used to clean the house and stuff. We had a driver. So, like, you know, I never had that sort of upbringing myself. So it's like very natural for me, I guess, to, you know, to just take that, just continue that way. I find it weird if someone makes me breakfast. I get up and make my own breakfast and, you know. But that's me.
But that's interesting, Abraham, because what that's unique. You might not think it is, because you've just said something which ordinarily are not mutually inclusive. That being that you were raised with servants and maids and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But, and so you would expect you to be a spoilt brat and want everything at hand when you want it to be. But the fact that you also went to boarding school and you had that, you learned for yourself, you had that, the aspirations to that you wanted to do things for yourself, and you did. Those things don't necessarily go hand in glove. So that's unique in itself. Yeah. Maybe you might say, no, there's a lot of individuals in the same position as you, but then let's look at it in, I can look from this region, the Middle Eastern region, individuals who've gone through that same thing. They don't get that autonomy and independence, or they don't want it. They expect to continue to be served, to continue to have everything done for them and their nose wiped and other nether regions as well. So that's very interesting that you've said that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to be honest, bro, even amongst the English aristocracy and, you know, I think there is the, you can have servants, but it's not often, you know, often these guys go into the military. So you like even see Harry, Charles, William, all of them, they've all spent time in the military. And believe me, no one's there wiping your bottom in the military. Yeah,
that's right.
It doesn't matter if you're the flipping king or the prince, whoever, right? In the army, it's the army and you have to muck in with everybody else. And when it's your turn to clean the toilets, you flipping clean the toilets, mate. You know, it doesn't matter if you're Prince Hoodie Poodie. Yeah. And so there's that whole thing, like, you know, there's the strong vein within the aristocracy and the middle class of, you know, like men have to be men. They have to be tough. They have to be self-sufficient. I mean, you may have a servant, but you don't rely on that servant, right? So, I mean, the fact that I had servants didn't mean that I wasn't able to make my bed in the morning, clean up my room, and, you know, cook my breakfast if I needed to. It's quite the opposite, actually, to be honest. So I find this whole pampered man, I find it quite revolting, to be honest. I think it's very unmasculine. I think it's effeminate. I think it's puerile. I think it's like infantile. And it makes for a horrific, base on which to build the ummah, right? I mean, these are not people who could do anything significant for a civilization, right? There won't be. I mean, look at Saudi Arabia. This war in Yemen, this horrific, disastrous, disgusting, war that's going on. And basically because Saudi troops are so pampered, they're so spoiled, they wouldn't get out of their air-conditioned tents. Yeah, they're too flipping fat to run 50 yards. So, you know, they think that the way to win a war is just bomb people into oblivion, you know, women and children, all the rest of it. This is the reality, right? And this is not just the Saudi army. This is across the board, right? You remember back in the days, bro, when there was Bosnia and before that there was Afghanistan. And that was a time when you could go and fight jihad, and it wasn't a big thing, right? We've talked about this before, right? Like now you think, oh, if you go off to Syria, that's it, you're in prison. Well, it wasn't like that back in the days, And we would give sermons and khutbahs and circles and they were quite happy, Yeah.
And some of us went. Some of us went.
Yeah, bro, they were quite happy. The authorities here were quite happy to have us recruited to go off and fight again, in their eyes, communist, you know, Russia, right? The point being is that, I mean, anyway, I don't want to go on too much about that because we've talked about that plenty already.
Right.
I just want to make the point that there was all this talk, jihad. Brothers, you know, love to talk about jihad. And we've talked about before the jihadis and takfiris, they would mouth off the most about jihad, But yeah, I used to say in the khutbahs, I said, if you guys don't even know how to take a poo in the woods, if you go out into the forest today and you had to go and, you know, take a dump, you wouldn't know how to, excuse my language, I'm trying to make it nicely, you wouldn't know what to do, right? Let alone if, you know, imagine you had to relieve yourself and there was bombs blowing up all over the place. So people have got no idea, bro. No idea how to live out life, even exactly. For a night, a night. Is this spoiled, weak, you know, almost effeminate, and I'm sorry, there's just too many Muslims like that across the board, everywhere.
And the irony of that, Abdurrahim, what you're saying is, and it's funny, as you were saying about going to the woods, I'm laughing because it reminds me of a childhood nursery. If you go down to the woods today, you'll be in for a big surprise. But let's forget that. That's just a childhood memory that's come back. But the irony is that, as you've mentioned, that some of that machismo, if you like, that macho image that is portrayed outwardly is then transferred inwardly within the home environment, and the expectations of the wives, of our wives, are such that it can become oppressive. And chapter and verse are cited in evidence to say, and they are authentic verses in the Quran. The Quran, of course, is authentic. There are authentic narrations that are there.
Yeah.
That they use, and a Muslim wife seeing that doesn't want to go against the narration that's there, but the way it's being used prescriptively without any spirit, without any understanding, causes her not only to be depressed in the first instance but to kick back against that. And then the husband, who then says I'm a degree above you, then starts accusing our wives of disobedience, going against the deen, and we need to take a second wife because we want a strong woman and everything like that. I'm not going to get into second wife thing because they're obviously merits, virtues, there are downsides as well. But the point here is that that character or characteristic or type of man that you've defined does that. And we see that in non-Muslims as well. Look at what happens with domestic abuse amongst the police force. We see that the policemen come home and there's a high rate of domestic abuse amongst their wives. So that machismo outside, then they transfer that in and they have expectations of their wives to treat them in that way as though they've got the uniform on and they should be feared and they are the long arm of the law and all of this. So what you're saying, I do agree with. What I would say, though, so not caution, but I think just to put a temper and an aspect of that, is that we do have rights. But the point is, like Ali radiallahu anhu said in that famous athar, I think you would remember it as well, that he doesn't call upon the rights of his rights from his wife, lest she calls upon her rights upon him from him, and he's unable to fulfill them. And when we look at that balance there, that caution there, you said it last week, the man who has to say, you must obey me, you must do this, I want you to do that because I'm the husband, epitomizes weakness, epitomizes insecurity. And we have to ask where that comes from. And before I come back to you, Abdurrahim, a sister said that I can speak on this, a few sisters, because I've been contacted. Some are married to men who are man-childs. They've basically been pampered by their mothers so much, that their expectations are that their wife does that and then some, and they're even supported by their mothers. I have accounts
where the
mother would reinforce that if the daughter is not doing A, B, C, D and is effectively a slave, and has foregone her rights, the mother then puts pressure on. And if the mother's unhappy with the daughter, the husband sides with the mother because he says, well, brings the hadith again, the three rights of the mother over the father, over the son, sorry, and has three times more rights than the father does. And often, and I'm not frowning upon this, but the wife in the cultural relationships often moves into the family home. And that becomes like a prison and a place of torture and mental torture and a nightmare for a number of sisters. I'm not saying everyone, and I'm not saying it all goes wrong, but I'm talking about the cases that have come to me directly in that instance. So the husband now is basically a child, okay? With this woman, she may be a trophy wife, okay? She may have a career, she may have not. They may want her to be a slave in the home. And she is at the beck and call of, not the husband, but the mother. And the husband then reinforces everything from the mother, the mother-in-law. Yeah. Those are boys. Those are babies. They are not men. They shouldn't be in relationships. They should stay at home with mummy and do whatever that mummy wants them to do and have their head rubbed and massaged, maybe get cocoa and milk in the evening so they can go to bed and just say, yeah, I'm a grown man and mummy's happy with me. But they should not think by marrying a wife, externally referencing in order to fulfill a parental requirement, makes them a man or makes them better than where they are emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, whatever it may be. We have men like that. But then let's move away from the culture aspect. We've got converts who come into the deen. Okay. I'm talking about some from my background, my cultural background. And they've come from a background where there is chauvinism, but not to the degree where you see them being misogynistic to women, because it's much more an even balance in jahiliya, the way we interact with women, women's rights, everything. But we come into the deen, we see these edicts, we see these descriptions, we see these rights of the husband. And then somehow, and I'll say that's an element of idealism, misunderstanding, or an inner yearning to have this dominant hand, we start using what we learn on the deen as a battering ram against our wives to stop them. Like, you cannot go out of the home. As you're saying, it wasn't the hadith, it was the ayah of Quran, stay in your homes. But that wasn't the understanding, as we discussed the week before. But they start using that. We use that to repress, to oppress, thinking that we're not doing that, but in actuality we are, especially in the context of the societies that we're living in and the way we misconstrue these understandings. So it's not just a cultural context, it's that context that we've come into the deen, found all of this wealth of information about the role between the man and the woman, and we may have had insecurities before Abdurrahim, that we were not in the career path as the women that we knew. We were not climbing that career ladder as women were. And we may marry a sister who was in that train or in that pathway and who is qualified and has got academic acumen. And so in order to repress or subjugate her in that way, we bring the deen, you should be here, I should be here, even though we don't have the ability, we don't have the qualifications, we don't have the experience, we don't have the nous to go out and be as the man is supposed to be, or as the deen says he's supposed to be in the description that we have from the Quran and the Sunnah. So neither, we can't achieve that. So instead, what we do is we repress and deflect our insecurities onto our partners. There are men like that as well. Again, I proffer boys, not men. Or in some instances, broken men, who came to the deen broken, who married or tried to get married to escape from their mothers because they were broken by their parents, by their mothers in that instance, or by the expectations of their father, or by expectations of their culture. They're broken, they bring that, and it all lands at the feet of their wives, who are expected to address and deal with all of that. And they have their own issues as well, and that comes out within the marriage, but they're the ones who are supposed to suppress that because they are, in inverted commas, the fairer sex and should be obedient to their husbands and should forego so many things for their husbands to achieve, or not, as the case may be. I've said a lot. I'll stop.
think you talked for 20 minutes straight there, bro.
There you go.
Part this of the problem is, bro, like, I think you need to, it'd be good to just mention one topic instead of 20. Because you, like,
this is all in the same frame.
You've gone through so much stuff, bro. It's like, yeah, I mean, the thing is, you said most of what needs to be said anyway. I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but there's no harm in talking about it again. My advice to everybody, yeah, is when it comes to marriage, forget what the Sharia says. Yeah, I know that's really controversial. People are going to be like, well, astaghfirullah. But honestly, really, yeah, forget it, right? Because, and this whole thing, like, honestly, like, if brothers are sitting there thinking they're going to pull out some hadith like it's a flipping, I don't know, whatever it is, like it's you know, pistols at dawn or something like that, or gunfire at the OK Corral, yeah, yeah, I've got this hadith to, you know, I mean, honestly, I think it's even worse than abusing women. It's abusing the religion, because that's what it really is. I mean, a lot of the time, people are just using the deen. And you know, I guess you and me probably been as guilty as anybody of it. You just use the deen in order to get what you want. You know, you want something, and instead of finding a path of negotiation, right, and trying to bring about that change through love and compassion and friendship, yeah. You know, we you see, the interesting thing is, bro, Abdulhaq, is that people are very quick to use, or, you know, brothers are very quick to use these hadith about, you know, the wife should be like this and the wife should be like that, and the Prophet said the wife should do this and that and so on, and there's so many of them, of course, right? But they forget also, and this is a weird thing, bro, this is a really weird thing, right? So you'd give me your thoughts on this. How is it that you forget that your wife also is your sister in Islam? And all the hadith that apply to how you should treat your brother in Islam, yeah, how you should treat them, how you should love for your brother what you love for yourself. None of you truly believe until you love your brother what you love for yourself. How about the hadith that, you know, wallahi, you're not a believer, wallahi, you're not a believer, wallahi, you're not a believer, the one whose neighbor is not safe from his mischief? What if your wife is not safe from your mischief? She's even closer to you than your neighbor, right? That makes you even worse, less of a believer. Like, we forget all of these hadith about love for your brother what you love for yourself. How would you treat your wife in a way that you don't want to be treated, right? How do you expect things from your wife which you don't do yourself? It's just like, what happens? Like, oh, she's wife now. She's wife. She's in a different category of human being that's somewhere between sort of slave and servant. And bro, that just is not right at all.
Shall I tell you what?
She's a free woman, bro. This is why I think the Shafis have something, bro. The Shafis have something, right? Because, you know, according to the Shafi madhab, according to Shafi fiqh, the wife doesn't have to do anything. The only thing she really has to do is when her husband wants to have sex with her, you know, she shouldn't refuse, right? Obviously, she's got a good reason. But that's it. She doesn't have to cook. She doesn't have to clean. She doesn't have to do anything, not for her husband, nothing. All those hadith about obeying your husband, they say it's not about housework. It's not about this. It's just about this matter of you have to fulfill his sexual needs, right? The other things, it's extra. If she wants to do that stuff, that's extra. In fact, he is supposed to provide a servant for her to do all of that stuff. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that 100%, but I think that's a very, very strong case because, you know, anyway, I'm not, you know, what do you think, bro? Otherwise, I'm going to...
I think that's a great...
I'm just going to criticize you for talking for 20 minutes and
But you know what, Abdurrahim, because you know what, there's so much to pour out that it's
important. No, there is, bro.
We both
said, it's like all I would do is just say, yeah, what can I do? I agree. The first stuff you said about the first thing that you said, bro, about
family.
Families, these brothers living at home, you know, expecting their wife to treat them like their mother treated them. And like, honestly, it's just, and bro, no job. These guys have no, the woman is working. The woman is working. She's got a high-end career, bringing in the money. Plus, she's doing looking after the babies. Plus, she's looking after him,
right,
the flipping extra baby. Plus, right, she's looking after the mother-in-law. Honestly, bro, it's like vomit-inducing behavior. It is this, like you said, do not marry these men. And this is the problem we've got, bro. This is the problem we've got, right? Who on earth are our daughters going to marry? Yeah,
that's because the problem.
Where are the men?
Yeah.
And I'm going to be brutal, bro. A lot of this comes from Pakistani, yeah, and Arab culture. Pakistanis and some Arabs are especially bad at this particular type of behavior, right? I've seen a lot of it. Anyway, bro, that's it. And I'm going to zip it up now.
You know, Abdurrahim, like it is a raw subject. And we're being honest here. Were we once like that, or did we understand the deen like that when we first came in? And
well, we abused it. I think we abused it.
We used it for our own selves and understanding. We did. Women have done it. Sisters have done it as well. But to answer your question, why do those hadith not apply to our wives? That's a really good question, Abdurrahim. I was thinking about it as you were speaking. And you know what I think it is? Again, you can take it out of the religion and look at couples that have those domestic violent issues and problems. Because we've revealed or shared the most intimate parts of our lives and who we are with our wives, they know us, okay? Yeah. They see us and they know us in ways that others will never know us outside of the home. And we feel threatened by that. But some of us feel threatened by that. And we won't say that, but in the way we treat our wives, that is what is being enacted upon them. Okay.
Why do people feel threatened, bro? I want to understand.
Because you've shown vulnerabilities, dare I say, you've shown weaknesses that you sometimes feel. Let's talk raw, Abdurrahim. It's like a man, you see this happening with men back in Jahiliyyah as well. The man will sleep with the woman. The woman will sleep with the man.
Yeah.
At that most intimate point of orgasm, climax, whatever, that is the most sensitive and weakest part a man will get to. It's the most pleasurable as well. But the woman sees him in that way. And she sees a weakness and a vulnerability. And he doesn't like that after the event. We love the chase. We love she's responding to us. We love getting to that moment. Mm-hmm. We love getting to that intimacy. And if men are being honest, if we're being honest, Abdurrahim, we may have felt that momentarily before in our jahiliya, maybe in the deen, but because we're Muslim. At that point of the woman seeing, sensing, experiencing that level of weakness, vulnerability, intimacy. Sometimes men wish that part they didn't have to go through. And some men react to that. They go and have other relationships to show, I don't care about this woman, I'm tough, even though that woman's affected them. I can have many women, I don't really care. Look, and I'm going to give you a case here, Abdurrahim.
I'm not going to say much, bro, because otherwise you're going to skip to another subject, yeah? So, no, because it's good. So that's one topic, I think, it's just one to have a discussion about that. I'm not going to say much, but it's very interesting that just an advice to sisters as well, right? Just relationship advice is that it's very, very, really interesting what you said. Yeah. And it goes back to what we talked about last week about vulnerability and admitting vulnerability. And it's interesting as well that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not allow a man to withdraw, you know, at the moment of ejaculation from his wife, right, without her permission.
That's right.
And it's also, this is the moment of her pleasure as well. It's interesting that this is a moment of the wife's pleasure as well, right? That she gets pleasure from that moment of his complete, in a sense, you're right, vulnerability. But it's interesting to say, also interesting to point out that many men after sex, right, like women quite often want to just sort of cuddle and, you know, whatever they want, just to whatever. But sometimes a man just wants to go off and sit by himself, right? He wants to go to his cave, you know. And, you know, women need to understand that, well, that's probably part of what's going on that you mentioned, is that in a sense, he needs to sort of reassert his, you know, his ability to be an individual and, you know, exist by himself, which is very important for men, by the way.
But also, Abdulrahim, good point. But yeah, staying with this topic so we don't bounce off, and we're talking intricately now. But also, that's the point we understand from the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam of a woman's heightened pleasure, but not always, because it takes it's harder to please a woman than it is a man. And so what happens, I'm talking about at that point of sexual intercourse. So what happens now is that often, more often than not, the man is satisfied before the woman. He may climax before and everything. And women, the woman is still waiting for that moment of pleasure. And the man doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know the different types of orgasm that a woman can have and everything. He's not the woman's anatomy, or hasn't experimented with her enough for that to happen. So what then happens is that she's left wanting. He's completely satisfied. And he feels again an inadequacy that he cannot show her that I'm feeling that inadequacy because I'm the man. So there's an element of frustration that comes and an element of bitterness comes towards her that she's not satisfied and he's not the one who's been able to satisfy
her.
So psychologically...
Bro, you're opening up a can of worms here, bro. It's such an interesting discussion. But, you know, I mean, my advice to men out there would be, take care of your wife first. Make sure she gets where she wants to be before you get where you want to go, right? Because once you've got there, it's finding the energy to, you know, turn your attention to her to make sure she gets her pleasure is going to be more challenging. So anyway, you know, that's, you know, like, it doesn't always have to be like that, but, you know, that's one thing that you could, but you're right. It can take time and it can be.
But so Abdulrahim,
that's a whole different subject.
To close this aspect of that topic, I want to show you about, you know, I worked in the Crown Prosecution Service when it first opened, 1986 up to 1988, in those 2 years. And one of the cases I saw to reinforce what I'm saying here, okay, this individual developed psychological problems. There was a murder case, okay, and I had to read the entire file. And what this individual did, there were some brutal murders that he did, but with one of his exes, basically who he'd had a relationship with 2 days before, he went back, okay, to her. He didn't kill her, but he raped her. And when they asked him, why did you do that when only 2 days ago you had a relationship with her? He said, I had to go and take back what she had taken from me. And I didn't feel complete enough until I'd done it in that way. Because the 2 days before, these vulnerability, intimacy, softness, everything came out. So going back and doing it that way for him was taking back his manhood. Now that's bizarre. It's sick.
But bro, I mean, the thing, there's this epidemic of these men, right? And there's this guy, he keeps, you know, we keep seeing his comment, you know, I don't mean to, you know, maybe means it innocently, but, you know, don't show your vulnerability to anyone except, especially women, and this and that. And that's just wrong, bro. I mean, that's just not right. And bro, this whole, I don't know what you call them, these men who like hate women and they resent them because they can't get dates and stuff like that. What's this whole
thing? Yeah. What are they called? I can't have the names.
You don't even know yourself, but it's like a massive phenomenon. A lot of them, unfortunately, seem to be sort of right wing, sort of extremists, even commit like violent crimes. Like there's a whole, you know, like people.
Red pill movement.
Just after I don't know if it's the red pill movement, bro.
Yeah, but there's a name for them. I can't remember. One of our viewers will be able to put the name up. I can't remember the name. It'll come to me shortly. But yeah, I know.
It's like these whole men. There's like these group of men. And I don't know. They're chased, not because they want to be chased, but because no one will date them. Right.
That's right.
But, you know, I mean, the thing is, bro, is that I think To go back to something you said.
Incels. They're called incels. Thank you.
Incels.
Oh my, yeah.
That's
incels.
It.
Bro. I've just found it now. Yeah.
Thank you very right. much. Yeah. Incel. Okay. This whole incel movement. It's very scary, bro. But, you know, it doesn't come from nowhere as well, right?
No.
I mean, because the other thing is there are a lot of men who are sensitive. They don't like this whole highly sexualized, flirtatious, you know, sort of fornicating culture, right? Like, people forget that, you know, there are men who are shy. There are men who don't like this. There are men who want to be, you know, they actually want to be good husbands. They want to build a family, right? You know, they want a secure relationship. They want that, but they feel like, you know, there are a lot of people out there, I guess, who are feeling that, well, unless I'm a bad boy, yeah, you know, that's it. Women always seem to go after those bad boys. And, you know, if I'm I'm not one of those bad boys, then that's it. She's just going to go off with one of them sooner or later anyway. I mean, I don't know, bro. You know, wallahi, the more you think about it, the more you think, alhamdulillah for Islam. You know,
no, you're right.
You know, yeah.
And we need to, you know what? I think that there are some legitimate problems we are faced of being husbands and knowing how to be a husband in today's world because of the many challenges and the shifting sands of what men's roles were, as we discussed last week, and women's roles. And we see psychological problems developing as a result of that. But we need to, a lot of sisters have mentioned how mothers have adversely affected their sons. Some have tried to say, you're not going to be like your father. And they've raised them in ways that are anti-masculine. Some have pushed them the opposite direction. You have to provide, you've got to be the man of the house. And we can't do that to our sons. We can't do that to our sons. We've got to really know them, understand the challenges they've got, and nurture them. Okay, they nurture them. And Hani's mentioning here, men behave like this in marriage because they know that divorce wouldn't stain them. So a lot of the time they don't have nothing to lose. And that's a very good point, because we are still in a society that when the woman is divorced and single,
yeah, it depends on the culture though, bro. Like that's true in Pakistani culture, but it's not so true in Arab culture.
Okay.
I'm generalizing. I'm saying very general things, but like, yeah, in some cultures, divorce is like, that's it. Once you're divorced, that's it. That's it. So I know, like in India, for example, someone was messaging me recently. That's their case. Once a woman's divorced, you know, it's almost like someone won't look at her. But that's definitely not the cases in other cultures, right?
Right.
In fact, in some cultures, if she's been divorced, it might even make her more attractive as an issue for, in a weird way, for marriage. So, I mean, you know, these things do depend a lot on cultural situations. I wouldn't say that that's universally true, by the way.
And look at what Ben's saying here, and I think this is important. He's saying he personally doesn't hate women, but he hates the fact that they don't have accountability. That's an interesting point that he's making. And I would ask, well, why don't women have accountability?
What do you mean by that? I don't know. What do you mean they don't have accountability?
If you could write again and explain what you mean by that. Because if you're talking about the perspective where there's a culture of finger pointing and the women are perceived to be victims, or they play the victim card more often than not, and a lot of that is legitimate. But there are illegitimate claims where the wife, the ex-wife or the disgruntled wife can say, and we've seen it, my husband's a terrorist, he's got these extreme views, he beats me. Trigger words that are used by some women in order to raise the attention against their husbands. And we see that happening quite a lot in society. Not saying that it's all illegitimate, because a number of cases are very, very legitimate. But the point that Ben's making there, you'd have to elaborate a bit more, Ben, because I think that there is accountability from the husband and the wife in the marriages, and it's different types of accountability that we need to be looking at. But we can't speak for the women at this point, and for our sisters, as we said, we were not going to. But for us as husbands, Abdul Rahim, now, I would ask you this question. has it become, not for us, where we are in our lives now, I can't say that we would say that, but has it become more difficult to be a husband, a Muslim husband, balanced Muslim husband today than yesterday?
No, I definitely don't think so. But I mean, that's just, again, I can only talk. I don't know. I mean, from my personal position, not really. I don't think so. I think it's just a question of, you know, I guess if you just have that growth mindset where you're always looking to learn and you're not looking to justify yourself and just, you know, feed your ego, you know, ego is the enemy, right?
Right.
But if you're really trying to improve yourself and you're trying to improve your character and you're trying to be a better human being all around and a better husband, to be the best husband you can be, the best dad you can be, you know, to be the best human being that you can be, to be the best worshiper of Allah that you can be. So I was thinking about this whole thing, bro, that marriage is half of faith, right? I mean, bro, that's another topic we should talk about, like, because I had some mind-blowing insights recently into why marriage is so challenging, right? To go back to our main topic, right? I think that, I don't know about you, but I definitely still have this big inner child in me. Like this, when I say an inner child, like maybe not in a baby, like a child, but, you know, I guess in some ways I still sort of think I'm 22. And I still want to do a lot of stuff. I don't mean haram stuff here, right? You know, but I am constantly tempted to just walk out of my house and just disappear and go on some adventure somewhere, you know, a little bit like Bilbo Baggins going on in The Hobbit or something, literally. And it's just like, you know, it's a real, and that's what I was thinking about, why marriage is half the deen. Because ultimately, and this is really the key to this subject, bro, right? Because I don't think we've actually really got down to the nitty-gritty of what this topic is about. Because we can talk about all of these things, but we need to talk about, we need to be solution-focused as well, right? So what is the difference between a child and a grown-up? What is the difference between a boy and a man? The fundamental difference, in my opinion, is a man is able to control their impulses. A man is able to control their desires. Mm-hmm. A man is able to pause and plan and think ahead. A man is able to take responsibility not only for himself, but for his family, right? That's what a man does. He takes responsibility for himself, for his family, for society. This is what an adult does. This is what a man does.
Right.
Children, they just do what they fancy, you know, and they find it very, very hard to control themselves.
Right.
So this is the crazy thing is you see men. I mean, they're men biologically from the point of view of, you know, they're 37 years old. They're still living at home. They're still don't have a regular job. They sit there playing computer games. Yeah. Probably watching a lot of porn, playing computer games, getting takeaways, just living the life like that, living off their parents, living off their whatever, scraping whatever, no responsibility, no thinking about improving themselves, no thinking about building a family, building society. So this is really what we have when we talk about what does it mean, boys, right? Boys are people, they're just kids who live on their impulses, right? They're just going after the next exciting thing. They're running after the next bit of entertainment, right? And they don't realize that in reality, what it means to have the deen, our way of life, our religion, is about controlling yourself. It's about controlling your impulses, about self-control. It's about willpower. It's about self-discipline. It's about true grit and determination. And I'll tell you what, really being a husband and really looking after your family, Abdulhaq, bro, that's what it teaches you, right? It teaches you just can't do whatever you want when you feel like it.
That's spot on, Abdurrahim. That's spot on. And also there's what you said about the Bilbo Baggins, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
But what you said there, being childlike, can be okay in circumstance. What you described of these men at home at 37, that's childish. I totally agree with you. I think that is such a fantastic summarization that you need to write that down and share that, I think, on social media, because that's so, you summarized it so succinctly. There's another aspect of that I want to add, and let me know what you think about this, and I'm going to make sure I'm not contradicting myself from what I said earlier. There's also another aspect. I remember sitting with a close brother, you know him as well, about a year and a half ago, and we sat for 12 hours. I was visiting Dubai at the time. I wasn't
12 hours.
He came and sat in my hotel with me, said, I haven't seen you for a few years. And we had breakfast, lunch, dinner. We just kicked it from 12 noon to 12 midnight, just catching up. But he said something to me, and I've heard a few brothers say this, and I understood what they meant. He said, look, Abdulhak, I love my wife, but one of the things I miss is the way she used to pay attention to me, pamper me, not baby wise, but he said, you know, when you're first married and you're into each other, and everything. He said, I understand why that's not happening now, because we've got children, we've got responsibilities, she's got to focus on those, she still focuses on me, but not in the same way. And so he was actually saying to me, look, I want that back, but I don't think I can get it. He said, the only time I got that back, and he was thinking, I need to marry again. I said, no, whoa, hold on a minute. Take time. I've married a few times. You need to get it right. Don't just run off in that direction. When his wife realized that he was missing that, and he communicated that to her, and she was very pleased with me, and he's a good husband, mashallah. And she revisited that, and I saw him recently, mashallah, now that I'm living here. And it all came back. And I'm saying this as a sort of, a message to brothers, a message to sisters. So in him highlighting that he's missing that, that sort of vibe that he had in the early stages of his marriage, it's come back to an extent now. And I see that that he was relieved about that. But men do miss that, as do women, okay? That initial spark, or understanding, appreciating that things have changed because responsibilities, you've got older, you've got used to each other, you still love each other, but you're not in love with each other. And I think for the husbands, as husbands, one thing that's really important, and I'll say this, and mashallah, I'm happy I can say this, I've been in plural marriage and everything, alhamdulillah, but I've always remained in love with my wife, okay? And I think, I can see, I detect that she's still in love with me, even the way we communicate when we go out and everything like that, when we go for meals. And I think that that's very important to add that to what you said about being men, okay? Being a man as opposed to a boy, okay? Because if you're a boy and you're not getting that, you're going to start treating your wife with malice, with spite. And you're not going to explain why you're treating her in that way, because you're too immature to say, I just want you to pay attention to me. I want that feeling that I used to have, that we used to have before. Pay attention to me. I miss having that attention for you. They may not do that because some women may perceive that as weakness. They may not do that because they're immature and childish and don't have that emotional intelligence to be able to articulate themselves in that way. So I think what you've said and what I've highlighted there, when you put those together, that really demarcates the men from the boys. The man knowing his feelings, his emotion, what's missing, how to articulate that, okay, and how to acknowledge why this is happening, whereas the boy will throw all the toys out of the pram and cause even more problems, go into sulks, disappear for ages, not communicate with his wife when he comes in. She hasn't got any idea what's wrong, and it's because he can't emotionally articulate, I just want you to give me a kiss or give me a hug or pay attention to me.
I mean, this is like my marriage advice. Whenever I hand out marriage advice, I like have a few, few things. There's only a few real things I think that are important. And it's so interesting that what you mentioned, because one of the things I always say is that your wife or your husband is not a mind reader, right? And there's this thing, and I knew this from Jahiliyyah, right? So this is something I understood before Islam, right? When you're really in love with someone, like when you're really in love, like you said, in love with someone, right? There's this almost mystical connection, inexplicable connection, yeah, that just goes way beyond. Like, there's some of the things that will happen do not have explanations within the physical world as the way that we know it, right? And I can give some examples, right? But I forget the examples. The point is, you know, that it's almost like you're able to almost totally feel how that person is feeling, right, at any given time. But the thing is that that very almost never lasts forever, right? It's like not a total ongoing situation,
right?
And so what you think, it's very easy to think, and this can be made worse by watching lots of movies, yeah, because they don't help you deal with reality at all, right? And you think that, oh, she's supposed to love me, she should know what's wrong. And by the way, women do exactly the same thing. They think, oh, my husband should know what's wrong, I shouldn't have to tell him, he should know what's wrong with me, right? And then, like, when he's totally clueless, it's like she will get more and more angry. And when he, you know, when she's totally clueless, you know, he gets more and more mad and more whatever. And it's all, it's not, maybe it's not even immaturity. Maybe it's even not he's a baby or she's a baby or whatever. It's just no one told them, like, hey, wake up. Like, that person is not a mind reader, right? And love can be like that sometimes, but most of the time it's not. Like, even for people who are really intensely in love, it's not like that. Maybe very occasionally. So if you have a problem, you've got to talk about it. If you've got an issue, you've got to discuss it, right? And if you don't want to, well, get over it then. You know, like, don't blame someone. It's like, bro, I saw this video clip that this brother posted, right? Well-known anti-feminist brother, right? and he posted this video of this guy standing outside his house or the flat, right? And his girlfriend or whatever, a wife or whatever, was throwing all the clothes, yeah, and saying, you know, you're disgusting, right? You slept with my sister. And he said, but I didn't. She said, yeah, you slept with her in my dream, in her dream.
SubhanAllah.
Right? He said, what? I said, I can't stop that. What am I supposed to do? And she's going, you're disgusting, right? It's like, bro, what? This is how mentally deranged people are these days, right? This is how mixed up they are. This is how confused they are, right? So the thing is that it's all about communication, you know. Like, if you don't want to communicate your issues to your wife or your husband, then don't make it an issue. It's that simple.
Yeah. Can I come in on that? That's a very good point. On just to add to that as well, one of the things that we make mistakes with as well is that when, and I remember working this out and thinking, okay, I've got to look at this. But you may love your wife in the way that you know how to love her, but it may not be the way that she wants you to love her or is used to being loved.
Different love languages, bro. Different love languages.
So what happens? Yeah, love languages. So what happens is that you end up being like two ships passing each other in the night because you're showing love to her, and she's not responding to that. She's like, and you're thinking, she's so ungrateful. I've shown her love. I've poured out my heart. I've bought her this. It might be from symbols or whatever, but then when you're checking and saying, well, but I love you and I'm showing you that I'm loving you. And she's saying, well, but that's not what I need. That's not the love I need. I need this type of love. And so what we need to do is we need to, if we love our partners, our wives, and our husbands, we really need to love them as they want to be loved. So, for example, some of us are really intense in how we love, okay, and we don't know any other way. And some women love that, okay, like, yeah, I want this, and then it's good. Some women are like, that's too overwhelming, that's too stifling, that's too needy, I don't need that. Yeah. Then you feel rejection, like, no, see, that I don't like. It can be the other way around. So we need to really find out how to love our wives. Men need to do that and not then feel spurned when we're not getting a reaction that's the same, because we then say we want the same love back. but she may not be capable, or she may be more than capable, but not see that she has to love you in the way that you are loving her. And it's like the garment, Abdurrahim. We know, we all talk about that beautiful verse in the Quran, being the libas for each other. But remember, when you go and buy a libas or a garment, you don't just jump into skinny jeans and you've got your like 38 waist or 40 waist and you get into 28 skinny jeans and pull it on and say, it's my garment, because you're not going to fit. You get the garment and you tailor it. And it, you tailor it and she tailors it to fit just right. So with love, and let's be clear, that's not going to happen overnight. And our love and our relationships are going to, we're going to be working on these until death do us part.
Absolutely, bro. Listen, I just want to finish up with something that literally you made me think about when you were talking. That, and what you said is so true. And I was thinking, you know what, for a Muslim, we should really get that. Because, you know, one of the things that I often say to people who are not Muslim, right? And, you know, people who, you know, often people, they say, oh, you know, we, you know, I just pray to God any way I feel like, you know. And like, remember, we used to talk about this. We used to say that you can't worship God the way you want to worship God, right?
Exactly.
You may, you know, you may think you could sit there and just smoke lots of weed and say, yeah, I'm worshiping God smoking weed, right? Like, but, you know, you may think, but at the end of the day, that's not right, right? No. If you really love God, right, you will worship God the way that God wants to be worshipped, not the way that you want to express your love. You're going to worship God the way that he is telling you is the right way to express your love to him. But that's just a truism in general, not just about Allah and your relationship with Allah. It's just true about relationships in general, whether it's with the creator of the heavens and the earth, or whether it's with your wife or your kids or anything that you love, right? If you really love that thing, you are going to take the time, you're going to spend the energy, you're going to find out, what does that person want from me? What does that, you know, what does Allah want from me? What is that? How does that person want me to express the love, right? And not fantastic. You just express whatever you think and then that's it, I'm showing my love, right? Because, you know, for all you know, that the person may interpret it as exactly the opposite. And I think if you haven't done that, you haven't really, you're not really loving that person.
Right. And how do you get to love that?
All you're doing is just manifesting your ego, really.
Ego, as you said, that is the destroyer. And concluding, that's brilliant what you said, Abdurrahim. Again, you need to write this stuff down. But one of the things as well, when I was listening to a series of lectures, Sheikh Tahir Wyatt, on Allah's names and attributes, how do you know how to love someone or something without getting to know them first? So if you don't know the magnificence of Allah's Asma wa Sifat, his names and attributes, for example, but yet you say you love Allah, then you're not being true in your statement. If we say that we love our wives, as many of us say we do, and it's not an egotistical validation that we show them something and we want it reciprocated and that's love, we really get to know, and we as husbands, we need to do that, okay? We need to really get to know, take the time to listen, to observe, to engage, not to validate ourselves through doing things with her, but getting to know her, warts and all, okay? And then the way that love will grow and foster for her will be tremendous, because we know her. And you cannot love something, you cannot truly, truly love something or someone without knowing them.
Yeah. Definitely, bro. Listen, it's been a pleasure as always, bro. And we can see from the comments that, you know, mashallah, we've provoked a lot of thought. And well, that's what we do a lot of the time. Alhamdulillah. Bro, it's been a pleasure as always. Inshallah, we're going to have another amazing conversation next week, inshallah.
Inshallah.
And as for me, Abdurrahim Green, and that one over, the The problem is the camera is always the other way around, bro. Does your camera do that? That one over there.
I'm pointing at you that way. You're there.
That guy over there is, oh yeah, that is
Abdulhak Baker.
And this was
a piece of cake. Jazakumullah khair to all of you.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Assalamu
alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.